Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, if you're traveling to Japan, this will be a lot easier to read if I put my glasses on. Just a second here, Tom. Okay. Be aware you can get in big trouble for taking pictures in the wrong places, and we'll tell you how you can get $2,000 plus $4,000 in expenses just for living green on Maui. Details are coming up next.
We make you a smarter traveler coming up at 3:20 with a follow-up on a story we first reported last week, safety in rideshare vehicles.
Gwen Duncan, our semi-favorite travel, well, no, actually our favorite travel advisor, is with us at 3:35 to talk about connecting times in airports. How do you know how much time to allow? Does it vary by airport or by airline? What about international flights?
Make dips into the mail. Who does? Mark dips into the. I don't know why.
Wow.
I said, yeah. Mark dips into the mailbag head first at 3:50 to answer questions about basic economy airfares, along with inquiries about parking, gas prices, and which airline has the best deal to Hawaii.
I'm Mark Kaufman. We've been doing this together for a number of years now. I just thought I'd introduce myself there in case you
would. Okay.
After a week of travel, it's nice to be home. Thank you for joining us on your Sunday afternoon for the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise.
Up to Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
All I want more than man.
I come from a land of love.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks.
Welcome, welcome, my friends, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for taking some time out of your day, or for that matter, just turning the radio on in the car while you're on your way to the grocery store. And by golly, what do you find? It's Mark and Tom.
How and you if doing? You haven't turned your radio on yet, then you should definitely do so. Because the program has started and now you're late.
All right. Hey, welcome back. You've been gone for a little while.
Thank you. I went from the lovely hula land of Hawaii to St. Louis, which is still one of my favorite places. Maybe not for a lot of people, but for me it is. It's home of the Cardinals. And then back to Sacramento. So it was, you know, 85 degrees, 25 degrees, and then back here where the weather is really weird. And if we don't get some rain eventually, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, there you go. Yeah, you were on the broadcast live from the islands last week. And of course, I want you to know I managed to keep it right here in Sacramento and make sure that everything was good.
I appreciate that.
You know, and I think when we were on the radio program last time, I said, you know, can somebody get us a couple of Kings wins? And we've gotten a couple. And
including you, you were just saying.
Yeah, we spoiler alert. Uh-huh. If you're taped the Kings game and you're going to watch it later, spoiler alert.
Okay, turn your radio down.
There you go. Kings win 199 against the best team in basketball, the Boston Celtics, who had won 10 in a row until today.
Yep. Here we are on a travel program. You have any other sports news that you'd like to share?
I think 49ers trail. So,
I see. Yeah. Well, that's fine.
And can I talk about selling my mobile home, or is that off the table?
Still, no, that's off the table, right? Yeah. You still have that thing?
I do. That's, you know.
Is it parked out in front of your house, or what's
it's in Mobile Country, one of the nicest parks anywhere. Uh-huh.
So if you're looking for a place to live, even if you can't afford to pay rent, call Tom Romano at
916-992-4746. Now, don't share that number with everybody.
Isn't that a number for the radio station?
No, that's my business cell number, 916-992-4746. It's a...
I told you couldn't plug that mobile home park on the radio anymore.
Oh. Well, I had... Okay.
That's the last time.
That's it. Okay.
All right. We better get to the travel news here, or otherwise we're going to...
Don't call now, though. I'm doing the radio show. All right. And with that being said, let's do what we always do at the top of every Travel Guys radio show. We do the travel news. Thank you, Luis. Mark, what do you got?
What have I got here? Let's see.
You want to lead with a mobile home?
I've got a short in my headphone, so sometimes I think that I'm never mind. It's a personal problem. If you were in the Galapagos, did you see this? Cruise passengers were evacuated from a grounded ship in the Galapagos. 46 passengers on a celebrity cruise ship had to be evacuated. They were taken to another ship, a celebrity ship that was in the area, and then taken back to shore in Ecuador where they were sent home.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that would be disappointing. People go to the Galapagos Islands, Tom, is where some really amazing wildlife.
I know. Is, I've seen that on the Discovery Channel and other places. Yeah, that'd be pretty disappointing.
Big disappointment. Japanese city banning tourists from taking photos in certain areas. This happened in Amsterdam in the Netherlands a couple years ago. They asked people to please stop taking photos in the red light district of the ladies in the windows. And in Kyoto, Japan, authorities are taking a stand against tourists who take photos in private areas by instituting fines who break the new rule. They don't want you to take photos in parts of the city where there are fines and things like that. So they're going to now what they're going to do is the legislation passed October the 25th. It forbids photography on private roads and asking the geisha girls to for unsolicited pictures. So you can be fined about 10,000 yen, about 90 bucks. So if you're going to Japan and you're a person who just takes your cell phone and takes pictures of everything, take an extra $90 with you so you can pay the fine.
Right, yeah. If it's something that you just got to have, you're going to just have to pay for it.
A guy in the Hilo International Airport last weekend created a disturbance when he heard that his luggage was lost. He was a 30-year-old man. He began behaving violently, knocked a police officer to the ground, injured a second police officer before they injured him with a taser because his luggage didn't land with his flight. Folks, I really don't recommend that type of a response. This man is now facing disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and two counts of assault on a police officer because his luggage didn't arrive. I don't know what was in the luggage, but whatever it was, it must have been pretty valuable because he could go to jail for a long time. Here's a couple of Frontier Airlines stories. They had an inaugurating service in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and the airline flew in a plane to run out the first flight. Now they've got, you know, balloons and a celebration in the airport and the mayor's there and a new airline is coming to Green Bay, which probably doesn't happen every day. And the plane flying in has a bird hit on the way in, and now the plane can't take off because it has to be inspected and they don't have people in Green Bay to do it. So the first flight has to get canceled out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, home of the Packers, I might add. But here's the flip side of Frontier Airlines for the week, recognized for fuel efficiency. Frontier Airlines is on track to become America's greenest airline. The carrier has been ranked as a top airline for fuel efficiency. International Council on Clean Transportation. The travel industry is starting to understand that the whole global climate thing not only impacts them, but they are somewhat responsible for part of it with all of the flying around in airplanes and stuff. And something's going to have to be done about that if we're going to address this problem. And speaking of addressing that problem, the folks in Venice this week have floods there are threatening priceless artworks and history and changing what has been a very unique way of life there for centuries. You may have seen this in the news. Venice was flooded twice last week. They are being flooded again today by a high tide. So that makes three times in 7 days. The type of thing that has happened to them now twice this week hadn't happened for 45 years. So this is going to happen more often. And they've tried to surround the city and the parts of the city are below sea level. So as the water rises above, as the ice melts and the water rises, Venice is a city that's going to be one of the first to be seriously impacted. And I can see a time they're really having a big problem because all this water and all the history and all those buildings, they weren't made to accommodate all the things that water do on an ongoing basis. So,
but, you know, since we don't have any climate issues, any global warming or anything, according to the president guy.
According to a lot of folks, yes. Last week's readers poll for our friends at Travelers United. How do you deal with sitting next to an oversized passenger on a plane? I thought this was a really interesting question. Here were the choices. I asked the flight attendant to move me or him or her. If I can't be moved, I ask for some kind of rebate. I ask them to please not try not to encroach on my seat space. I'm nice and just grin and bear it. I'm not nice and let my displeasure be known. So which of those five would you be? Would you try to get moved, get the person moved? Would you just try to grin and bear it? What would you do, Tom, if you got onto an airplane and you're in a situation where the person next to you is taking up a third of your seat space?
Yeah, you know, a lot depends on how long a flight it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a mood I happen to be in that particular day, mm-hmm. you know. But I would probably try to grin and bear it would be based on my personality.
Okay.
But if it really was uncomfortable, I'd ask to be
moved. Of those five answers, the people who responded to this Travelers United poll, the most of them fit into the category that you chose. I'm nice and just grin and bear it, 53%. So half of the people on an airplane, when faced with that situation, will just try to make the best of it. The other choices, ask the flight attendant to move me or him or her. In other words, to try to create some more space by moving somebody. That was the next most popular at 20%. Ask the oversized passenger to please try not to encroach on my seat space, 13%. And then if I can't be moved, ask for some kind of rebate. Or that's 6%. I'm not nice and let my displeasure be known as 8%. So,
well, nowadays, you know, if you fly, period, mm-hmm. Unless you're, you know, flying on planes with credible amount of space and legroom, making contact physically with people you don't know is something you better get used to. Because you're going to be leaned on. You're going to be leaning on someone. Mm-hmm. You're going to touch them. They're going to touch you.
Ooh.
And you just got to, you know, you got to just kind of live with it.
Yeah. Just wait till the day comes when the airline seats get so close, they put a swab of Crisco down each side of you as you're getting on the plane so that you can
slide in a little
easier. Or you'll have to stand up. All right. We talked about this in the headlines. How do you win $2,000? Going to Maui and just showing how green you can be on vacation. And oh, by the way, this solar company, Vivint, will pay you an extra $4,000 in expenses. Now, here's the deal. Tuesday is the day this contest ends. So travelguysradio.com, if you've got a wild hair up your rear end, the application doesn't take very much time to fill out. And maybe you can be the person. Actually, the deadline ends tomorrow. They're going to choose the winner on Tuesday. But you can get $2,000 to go green in Hawaii. We're looking for one green living enthusiast to plan, execute, and document an ecotourism trip to Maui. We'll pay you $2,000 for your time and provide a $4,000 stipend to cover your transportation, lodging, and entertainment. All we ask is that you make your trip as green as possible and help us spread awareness for a green economy. So this is pretty cool. Travelguysradio.com. You can see, and we'll try to follow it and see who wins. Maybe we can follow the winner. They probably won't be from Sacramento, but who knows? A chance to not only get paid for going to Hawaii and get your expenses paid too. That sounds like a fairly good deal, but you have to act quickly. Travelguysradio.com. You can find the application, and that's your travel news for today.
All right, coming up, we're going to make you a smarter traveler. We're going to talk a little bit more about that story we reported on about a week ago, safety in rideshare vehicles. That's coming up. Also, an update on my mobile home. No, that's not coming. We better take a break. I have to make a call back to somebody who called me.
Who already called you, yeah, exactly.
All right, we'll be back. We are the Travel Guys. Hey, what do you know? It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano every Sunday, 3 to 4, right here on KFBK, also iHeartRadio, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. All right, Mark, let's talk a little bit about the safety in rideshare vehicles. You know, we talked about this a week or so ago.
We did. We had a spot that a digital video mm-hmm. that the Washington posted that you can still connect to if you go to our website at travelguysradio.com. That we provided some of the narration to, but it was basically a safety trainer who was talking about what happens when something happens on the road and how does Uber respond to those things. And we weren't drawing any conclusions. We were just putting out information and letting you decide for yourself. This is from Lyft. This is an updated critical. They're updated from their safety and trust team. Trust and safety team, I'm sorry. And they issued this just this week. Helpful tips for riders, they said. Safety advice from fellow riders and five-star drivers. So, in other words, they asked their best drivers and some of the people who ride with them, what is some safety advice that they could offer? So here are some of their tips. One of them is request your ride from a safe place. An indoor location, for example, reduces time spent waiting on the street. Choose a pickup spot where your driver can easily pull over. This is something that not everybody does, you know, and plus there's 15 people waiting for a ride share and there's only room for one car or two cars. So ride share courtesy is something that I think is still in its infant stages that people are still kind of figuring out. But oftentimes there are more people waiting for a ride share or a taxi or someone just to pick them up in an area than can be accommodated. So sometimes you may have to go a little bit. You know, this is not uncommon to pick up your ride, but make sure that you're doing it in a play area that's safe, not only safe from bad people, but safe from bad things like high curbs and, you know, wet spots on the sidewalk when the weather gets bad in the east. Snow and things like that are going to be a factor.
Do you think it's a responsibility in any way for, let's say, hotels and airports and other public places to see that the rideshare companies have a decent place to pick you up, a place that is safe? Because, you know, a lot of times the hotels will not let the rideshare pick up where the taxis mm-hmm. and where people are coming in their automobiles. They'll have you down around the corner and over there somewhere.
And airports, in some cases recently, Tom, have been overwhelmed by the number of rideshare vehicles. I mean, for example, at LaGuardia Airport in New York, which traditionally for many years was a huge taxi airport. There were two spots to get a taxi. The lines were often huge and they moved quickly. And there were hordes of taxis in lines waiting for you. Now, a lot of those people are taking rideshare. So they didn't have room to accommodate the rideshare with the taxi's curbside. So the rideshare had to be put in the parking garage. Same thing they've done in Seattle. Same thing they've done in San Francisco.
But that also, you know, creates a certain amount of inconvenience.
It does. But people have to realize that what you talked about is how safe is it to be able to go someplace and pick up your ride? And they're not always doing this to punish people. The airport is looking at what resources do we have available, and from those available resources, where can we put these people?
Right.
Where they will be the safest.
Right. Continue on.
Pick the best car for your group before getting in the car. And I know a lot of people probably don't do this, but it's kind of like listening to the safety demonstration on the airplane. Nobody listens to it because they figure they'll never need it. But this is the same deal when you're doing a rideshare. Before you get in the car, match the license plate, the car make and model, and the driver's name with what you see in your app. At night, the Lyft amp, a colorful device that sits on many driver dashboards, can help you find your driver. You've probably seen those before.
Mm-hmm.
The color of the Lyft amp in your driver's car should match the color shown in your Lyft app. So that's kind of an interesting thing that I didn't know about.
I was unaware of that.
Until I saw this.
Match it like what? If it's a certain color, it's an available...
Well, that's telling you that it's your car. If the color in your app is the same as the color on the amp...
All right. Didn't know they did that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I always look for, you know, generally the drivers will get out and they'll holler your name.
They will.
And, you know, and
they'll call you on the phone once they get stopped or something like that. Share your trip information with loved ones. They'll see your location in real time. You can also check out your driver's route in your app to see how you're getting to your destination. Frankly, I always follow where we're going because I want to make sure that the driver is, you know, Uber and Lyft drivers, rideshare drivers are not always professional transportation people. So they may think, or their GPS may be saying go this way, but I can tell them that, you know, really and truly, here's a much better way to go.
Right. Yeah. You may know the area better than they do.
And they may decline your offer to help, but at least you can throw that out there. The other thing is that they put here, this is kind of interesting, exit curbside. Check for vehicles, scooters, bikes, and people before exiting your vehicle and make sure you haven't left anything behind, such as your phone or keys. But exiting on the curbside as opposed to the street side, because some people have gotten seriously hurt that way. Another, when they're talking about your checking for your stuff, a United Airlines person in St. Louis told me yesterday that they average one cell phone a day.
And I would guess that.
That is lost. So that's 300 and 60 cell phones a year just for United in that one airport.
Wow.
So it does point out the need to, you know, it's a wallet, phone, keys thing when you get out of the car. But anyways, some of those, I think, are kind of no-brainers. I like the idea about matching the color in your app to the color on the dashboard in the evening. That's a great idea. And also making absolutely certain that the car that you're getting into is the car that you ordered. So a few little lift tips, they say.
And if you're out partying with a bunch of people, make sure that the most sober person amongst the drunk ones that are all partying, it makes the connection and is cognitive enough to get into the right car. Because generally, when you're getting into the wrong car and bad things are happening, it's because a lot of times people are impaired. Like I say, if you're traveling in a group, make sure that the least impaired helps negotiate the deal. Well, Mark, do you get in the front seat? Do you, when you're if you're traveling alone,
uh-huh,
and an Uber or Lyft comes to pick you up, do you ride in the front or do you take the back?
Ah, that's a really
and
good...
why?
Because
that was the whole deal.
I usually get in the back because if I've got a briefcase or something, yeah, with me, there's a little bit more room in the back. But if I approach the car, I can see that the driver's got the seats not properly aligned or something, and there's no leg room in the back, then I'm going to get in the front seat. Or if I can see that the front seat doesn't have anything in it, and I'm not carrying anything with me, so I guess I don't have a standard plan.
Okay. Well, you know, for a long time, when the ride shares began, it was the family-friendly, courteous, you're riding with your cousin in his personal car, and you get in the front seat, and there's a bottle of water there for you, and mm-hmm, a little conversation, versus feeling like you're stuck in the back.
Lyft wants people to know that in October 2019, so that would have been just last month, all drivers participated in a community safety education program that they developed in partnership with RAINN, RAINN, the longest anti-sexual violence organization in the United States. They also go on here to list their criminal background checks and how they do those. One thing that we caught last week was, though, that oftentimes there's a 2 to 3 month lag between the time somebody does something bad and the time it shows up on their mm-hmm, background check. But they have a long list of things that they do. And so they're publicizing these things because their competition has gotten in trouble for not having it. So I would expect Uber to be out with an update of their safety program very soon. But anyways, just some ideas maybe that will make you a little bit smarter and a little bit safer traveler when you head out on the road.
Gwen Duncan joins the Travel Guys, our favorite travel advisor. We're going to talk about, that time between you arrive at an airport and you get on your next flight, and how do you make those plans? That's next here on the Travel Guys.
I'm on Harley, I'm on Harley.
Hey, we're back. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, every Sunday 3 to 4. You can follow along at travelguysradio.com. Links to our guests and most of everything we talk about, plus much more, is there at travelguysradio.com. Well, looking right across the way from me, looking good, making a face at me, too. He's turned the camera on there. Is Gwen Duncan with Cordially Yours Travel. Mark?
Well, you introduced Gwen, and then you came to me.
Yes, because you're going to go ahead and set up exactly
what it is
that you and Gwen, because you guys are the experts. I'm here just to kind of get you in and out.
You were just giving Gwen a cheap plug there.
That's right.
So now I understand. Gwen is here for us. Hi, Gwen.
Hi.
Gwen is here so that we can get an extra level of expertise here. I want to talk about connecting times at airports. Every airport has what is called an MCT, a minimum connecting time, that is considered legal. And you would be shocked to hear what legal times are considered in airports. But in most cases, it's 30 minutes or 60 minutes, depending on whether it's domestic or international. And what we're going to hopefully explain to you in the next 10 minutes is why some of those minimum connecting times really are not very feasible. And that if you're getting into one, you need to know what you're getting into and what some of the considerations might be when you're trying to pick a flight with and what connecting time. And as Tom pointed out during the break, if you fly from Sacramento to Salt Lake City on Delta and now you're going on to New York, you may have a choice of a flight that leaves in an hour and a flight that leaves in 2 hours and a flight that leaves in 3 hours. And you may have one to Newark and one to JFK and one to, you know, I mean, all kinds of different places in the New York area to choose from. So you may have a variety of choices. And that's kind of where what we're going to talk about kicks in. And if we have time, we want to talk a little bit about, since it's wintertime, maybe some of the hub airports that you want to avoid in favor of some others. So, Gwen, welcome back to the Travel Guys. It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
And so let's start our discussion here. You have made a list here. I find this really interesting. We talked about how at domestic airports, some connecting times are as low as 30 minutes. And then I looked at this list that you compiled here, and in Salt Lake City, it's 25 minutes is what is considered a legal connection.
Yes.
And why would that be? Is you guys know that airport pretty well.
It's a little bit smaller. For a quote, large airport, it's a little bit smaller.
It is. But
of course, they're building a new one right now.
Well, the airlines have their own method of how much the connecting time should be for their, you know, for their own airline and for the each individual airport. So you'll find some of them, like Delta, may be longer and American may be shorter.
Well, and they don't. It's not in the airline's best interest for an airplane to show up with 100 people, 75 of whom are connecting on a flight.
That's right.
And have them all misconnect, or a great number of them misconnect. It's not. All it does is create extra problems and extra work for them. But what I want to point out to folks here is, and here's an example. I fly United a lot, so I frequently am flying to Denver or Houston or Chicago in order to make a connection. In Chicago, the United commuter gates are quite a ways from the mainline gates. They're a good 10-minute walk average, and if you're in the wrong corner of the airport and you have to go to the other corner on United, it could be 20 minutes. And that doesn't count that you may need to use the bathroom, or you may need to stop to get a beverage to take on your next flight. Or you arrive late. Or let's say, for example, you arrive on a commuter plane, and when you got on the plane, you had a carry-on that wouldn't fit in the small overhead, so you had to gate check it. Now you have to wait for that bag to come back up once your plane lands, and sometimes that takes 3 or 4 minutes after you get off the plane. So you can't just run to your next gate. You've got to wait for that bag. Also, in Denver, for example, United is now using, much to some people's surprise, gates on the A and B concourse. The only way to get through the A to B concourse is to take the train. It runs every couple minutes, but that adds some time to your ability to be able to connect. United is also using some gates in the A concourse that are all the way at the end. So if you're coming all the way from the end of B to all the way to the end of A, and you've got a 30-minute connection, you're not going to make it, because guess what? The door to the airplane closes 10 minutes before flight departure time. Right. So when you're considering your connecting time in an airport, Tom, you're in go to San Antonio frequently, and you connect going one way or another, you have to subtract 10 minutes off of that time automatically, because they're not going to let you on the plane during those last 10 minutes unless you're fortunate and your plane is late. So, Gwen, you had some tips there that you were going to suggest to folks. So rattle those off, if you would.
I think one of the things is, if you've recognized that you have a really tight connection, that you should pay them more and get the seat that's closer to the front. That could save you 5-10 minutes.
It really could make a huge difference. Being in 10D or 34D could make a huge difference, could matter whether or not you made your plane.
That's right. And then a lot of people, if it's really, really important, I just recommend that they book a nonstop.
Well, and there are more nonstops from Sacramento than there used to be, so, which is one of the reasons that our airport has become more popular with people in the Napa Valley and the like, is because there are more places you can go from Sacramento where you don't have to make a change. You don't have to make it connecting. All right. What's another one on your list?
Okay. Some people get a little bit creative about trying to avoid long layovers. Some people even do it for when they recognize it's a short layover. But let's say it's too long of a layover and they're finding that they're just missing a connection by 5 minutes. So they book two separate flights.
Ooh.
Two separate flights. And when they do that, they think that everything's going to be great. But if it's on two different airlines, you have to claim your luggage. You have to go through security again. And then you have to go through and hope that if the first flight is late, you could miss your second one. It's considered a no-show.
You got to be careful, Tom, with these fares you go on, like Kayak and some of these places, and they say hacker fare, which usually means they've combined the first leg on one airline and the second leg on another airline. In a small airport, that might be fine. But what if you came into Sacramento on JetBlue and you have to go out on United? Those are completely separate terminals.
Right. No, that seems pretty crazy.
You got to... And believe it or not, I have noticed United on their website posting some of their Washington, D.C. fares now. They have two airports in Washington, National, which is close to downtown, and Dulles, which is 25 minutes out in the suburbs. They're not close to each other. And where you fly into one and connect out of the other, there's a note there that says, you know, departing from a different airport. But if you weren't really paying attention there, you might get to Dulles and find out that you're a $50 cab ride away from National, and that would be a problem. Another example, you go to Houston for another United hub. You fly in on a small, in or out on a small plane and in or out on a big plane. In other words, you're using a large aircraft and a small aircraft. The small aircraft all leave from the B concourse. You can only get there on the people mover. The people mover only has selected stops that it makes. So you may have to walk 5 minutes to get to a people mover stop. It may take you 5 or 10 minutes to get to another concourse, 5 minutes to get down to your gate. Guess what? If you had a 30-minute connection, you probably don't make your flight. Gwen, what's another one on your list?
Well, another concern, too, is if it's not a people mover, but it's a bus, because some of them will take in the bus people from one terminal to the other. And those are a lot more time in between the frequency of when they go from one to another.
And now that you mention that, on international flights sometimes, land and at a remote gate and you have to be bussed in. So the bus doesn't even leave until it gets full, enough people off the plane for it to be full. Then you have to go into the terminal, and now you have to start your journey. So these are all things that you need to consider when you're thinking about this connecting time. Personally, I try to avoid any connection that's less than an hour. And really and truly, to me, if I'm traveling individually, my favorite connecting time is about an hour, 10, hour and 15 minutes. That way, if I need time to get something to eat or use the facilities. If I'm traveling with a group of 25 passengers, I would prefer to have an hour and a half. If there's a 50-minute connection and a 2-hour and 20-minute connection, I'll probably take the 2-hour and 20-minute connection just to take the pressure off of everybody.
I think something else to consider is that, let's say you arrive late and then you're going to the next gate, but they've already closed the gate. The plane could be sitting there, but you can't get on it because they've closed the door. And that's a real problem.
Our special guest, Gwen Duncan, with Cordially Yours Travel. If you just tuned in, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Gwen, on your list of great stuff here, best domestic airports and worst. Why don't we take a quick glance at those? What do you got?
Okay. When I did some research to find out what statistically was there, and SeaTac came out number one, which was interesting. In Portland. And I think it's because it has to do with weather and traffic. They're not real, real busy airports. Charlotte came in third. Reagan Airport,
Washington, D.C.
Yeah. And then Salt Lake City. But the worst ones domestically, and I can attune to this one, it's awful. Atlanta is rated number one worst, and it's because it's one of the busiest airports. The next one is JFK, and they say that between December and February, they average about 19 inches of snow. And so that's one of the reasons, besides
JFK
the fact
would
that
be my
busy.
Least, yeah, oh, my least favorite
one.
Airport.
San Francisco, oddly enough, for people that think, well, what could be the problem there? But they have issues with fog. So does Sacramento, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then Denver, it has to do with high winds and snow.
My wife's least favorite place to ever fly through, particularly in the wintertime. Yeah, we just skip that all the time.
She just doesn't like the Front Range thing where anytime you're going up and down, you're kind of...
Oh, that's scary to land. The Newark airport has to do with the Europe jet streams that come through. And then Chicago, of course, for the wind
and the traffic. Okay, so in the wintertime, this list changes a little bit. Because obviously, now Chicago, you've got it on your worst airport list here, but in the wintertime, even worse.
Yeah.
Newark, even worse. Denver has the advantage of having 5 runways all at point in different directions, which helps keep the airport open. But let's face it, 1 or 2 runways open at Denver is not going to be enough.
Yes.
And plus they're expanding all the terminals there, which is going to put a greater demand on traffic. And the weather, the climate change is impacting the city of Denver. With crazy weather, I saw this report the other day. So they're getting more unpredictable. They're getting thunderstorms on shorter notice, and they're getting high winds more frequently and stuff like that. So that's kind of impacting things there. As a United flyer, I don't go to Chicago between November and March if I don't have to.
Thing about United, though, is that their hubs are Denver and Chicago.
Yes, but there's also a hub in Houston.
They've got other ones.
Yeah. And you can fly across country to Dulles with American in the wintertime, Phoenix for sure, you want to take a shot at. And with Southwest, you've got Phoenix and Las Vegas. So avoid Midway in the wintertime.
That's right. That's right. You just got to be a little bit smart and look at the different connections, because you'll see that in your choices.
If you do your homework and you go to your phone and just pull up monthly weather for some of these places, it will help you. But you also get into situations, and here's where the connecting time, Gwen, falls again. Before we're going to have to move on here. But if wintertime, bad weather, now you have to de-ice at an airport. So now your plane had to de-ice, but the airport you're going to, the weather is fine, and so it's going to depart on time. And now you've lost another 15 or 20 minutes that you couldn't have predicted, and that's going to come out of course, your connecting time. So in the wintertime, you have to be extra careful about those tight connections, because the airport you're leaving from, Sacramento, may have great weather, and the airport that you're going to may have great weather.
I have one suggestion.
But it's that connecting airport to worry about.
I have one. I know you only have a second. There's a website. It's called BTS.gov, and you can go on there and identify the month that you're going to be traveling. And on there, they list the airlines who have the worst on-time record anytime, and they're perpetual. This is something that happens all the time.
So we didn't get this to the travel guys. To the travel guys site, it's B as in boy.
B as in boy, T as in Tom, S as in Sam.gov, and they will show you. You can put in the flight number, and they'll say in any month that they're chronically late, and that means that they're late at least 30 minutes, 80 and 90% of the time.
Wow.
So it's kind of a nice thing to be able to look at if you're trying to decide between two flights.
So do your homework.
Yeah, do your homework.
If you don't know the airport that you're going to, you can. The beauty of this now is that you can pull up layouts of airports on your phone and your computer and stuff. You can look at these things. You can see that what you're trying to do is going to drag you across the airport, or that you're going to Dallas-Fort Worth, and American has 60 gates there. So a 30-minute connection is probably not a good idea. Now, of course, you might get lucky in the gate. You get off the plane and the gate's next door. Here's the other problem. You get on the plane and your phone's showing you that, hey, the connection's really easy. But when you get to the other airport, things have changed, frequently happens, and now your gate's in Timbuktu, and now you've really got to hustle. So the point of bringing you in, Gwen, and asking for your wisdom on all of this is to try to help people stay away from those really close connections and to pay more attention when they're booking, to make sure that if you've got less than an hour connection domestically, then you need to be doing your homework and make sure that you can get there, wouldn't
Absolutely.
You say?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, us people like myself and my wife, we don't fly as regularly as you professionals. So oftentimes what we're looking for is we'll look at the shortest flight. You know, this flight's 7 hours, this one's only five or whatever. And what we're looking at really in almost all cases is the layover.
That's yep. right.
And so we can easily put ourselves in jeopardy by always looking for the shortest flight, because that's going to mean, you know, that 40, 35 minute turnaround, you're at the wrong gate. And
that's where you're going to click on details before
yes.
you book it. And it's going to explain to you that the reason this one is shorter is, like, as you're pointing out, Tom, is that the connecting time is rather short. And may the force be with you if you get to Salt Lake City and you've got a 25-minute connection, because your chances of making it.
When you're looking at the details like you're talking about, if you book something and the last flight out is the one that you're connecting to, try to avoid that, because if you're late, then you have a forced overnight.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. If there's no other way, no other connecting
exactly,
flight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just got to. And we've got lots of ideas of the flight tracker. You can have that on your phone.
Gwen, thanks for coming in. Please stay for the next segment, because we're going to dig into the mailbag for just a minute here and answer a few questions. And you never know when I might need your expertise. The mailbag is next. We are the Travel Guys.
We're back. It's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Time for what I consider probably some of the most fun we can have on the program, and that is answering people's questions that come to the Travel Guys Radio mailbag. It's always good stuff, and more importantly, we know actually helping specific individuals get some answers. So, Mark, what do we have here today?
Well, let's see if we can knock out a few of them here before the top of the hour. Lucy from Galt says, I'm a little confused about Hawaii flights from Sacramento. It seems like there are a lot more choices than there used to be. Can you give us a rundown? Well, Lucy, it's a little complicated because it's changing, and it's but for right now, you can fly Hawaiian Airlines to Honolulu or Maui pretty much every day. You can fly Southwest Airlines to Honolulu, and you will soon be able to fly Southwest to Maui, but that doesn't start for a few more months. You can fly Alaska Airlines to Maui every day, and you can fly Alaska Airlines to Kona on the Big Island 3 days a week. Now, that route is going away in March. So what will happen in March is that you'll have three different airlines flying to Maui and two different airlines flying to Oahu, to Honolulu. Right now, no. Then there will be no direct service, no nonstop service to the Big Island, and there's no nonstop service to Lihue yet. Some of those planes will continue, those Southwest planes will continue on. So in some cases, look at the schedules, you can get one stop service. And since Southwest is only on the ground for 35 minutes, that would be a good way to go. Also, I might suggest to you that if you're taking a Hawaiian Airlines flight, consider going to Maui if you're going to another island, because connecting in Maui at the Maui airport would be a breeze compared to connecting in Honolulu. I just saw this the other day, and my family was connecting in Honolulu when we were changing islands, and it's not terribly complicated. There's 10 or 12 Hawaiian gates there, but in Maui, it's a lot simpler. It's a much, much, much smaller airport. So a lot less things can go wrong there.
Do they actually have a gate, or do they just put you...
No, they actually have gates.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes. Yeah. So
last time I was in Honolulu, they didn't have gates. That's how long it's been.
So, well, now they fly all the way across the ocean in one shot, Tom.
No kidding. Yeah, no, I used to have to stop halfway.
It's an amazing... Yeah, they don't have that life raft out there anymore. Yeah. So anyway, the point is, to our listener from Galt, is that there are multiple choices. There are more choices. If you can connect through Maui, it's a little simpler than, and Gwen shaking her head on the other side of the table here, it's a little simpler than connecting through Honolulu. Okay, here comes another question about basic economy fares. And this person wrote me almost the whole page of, they were obviously very frustrated, had spent a lot of time researching this, and they said it's not the same from one airline to another, was their exclamation. How do you know what you're getting? And that's it. You have to do your homework. If you go to travelguysradio.com, we have posted an article from Smarter Travel that gives you an idea of the pros and cons of basic economy and gives you a little bit of a rundown of some of the things that you can, what you can expect from each of the different airlines. I will suggest to you, if you insist on flying on a basic economy fare, it's all you can afford, it's all that you need, you're very happy with it, you're better to buy a cheap fare on United, Delta, American than you are to fly on Spirit or Frontier on one of their cheap add-on everything fares. Because if anything goes wrong, United, American, and Delta have many more ways to get you to your destination than those other carriers
do. What about the new JetBlue with the basic that they've just rolled out this last week?
I am glad you announced that. I mentioned that, Tom, because I just was reading about that this morning, and my observation was that JetBlue's basic economy is a little bit better than anybody else's. So if you're looking at the overnight to New York City where you're going to sleep on the plane anyway, maybe that middle seat is okay for you. And JetBlue has a little bit better options. Plus, they have a little bit more leg room to start with. So that's JetBlue would be my first choice. Be careful. Legacy Airlines are my second choice if you have to book a basic economy fare. But make sure you know what you're getting into. Pay attention. That cheap first column now has a lot of restrictions that it didn't have before. And finally, one more here I'd like to get to. Someone asked about... this was a two-part question. How come the most expensive gas station in town is the one at the airport? Recently, the Arco AM/PM there showed a price of $4.31 for regular, which was 20 cents higher than even the full-service stations in town. All I can say to you is that the airport director told us that they allow that Arco AM/PM to use people to use credit cards there, so they have to build that in. But yes, I agree, the gas price there is ridiculous. It's embarrassing, and people are getting ripped off. So don't buy gas at the Arco station. The only problem is if you have a rental car and you're returning it, you're going to get stuck out there, and those are mostly people from out of town. It's their last impression of from Sacramento, and I think it sucks. And finally, there's some questions here about airport parking. Beware. Parking is going to max out at Thanksgiving, so be very careful. Allow yourself plenty of time to get out there and park where you need to park. Airport parking, we're going to have our friends from TSA here next week who are going to talk about getting you through security once you get to the airport. But if you can't find a place to park, then you'll be skewered anyway.
Well, all right, there we go. We'll see you next week. Let's see, the Island of Black and White, live music in studio.
Yeah.
As well as Sid and Dale,
the TSA guys will be here. So you got any TSA questions, we'll take it. We'll have some good music, too.
See you next time, folks.
He never has the time to turn around.